This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillahi walhamdulillah wa salatu wa salamu ala rasulillahi wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. So this is a program that we're going to be having here every single day titled Ramadan FAQs. Right? The most frequently asked questions that we have during the month of Ramadan. And it can be questions in general, but obviously Ramadan-related questions will be prioritized here. But this is a reality that is there for a lot of people. A lot of people have questions, and especially during the month of Ramadan, when people are motivated to come closer to Allah, to practice their deen, to be more spiritually connected, that a lot of questions start to arise and a lot of different concerns come to mind. And sometimes folks might not have an outlet where they're able to ask those questions and get those questions answered. And so inshallah, binillah, for that reason, we're going to be having this daily session, inshallah. So we're going to go ahead and get started. I'm going to start with a couple of questions about fasting. So we had basically people are asking, you know, where they can ask their questions. So what we did was on Instagram, we had put out the word that if anybody had any questions, they could send them in. We'll also be posting to Facebook and Twitter as well, so people will be able to send in any questions that they may have. So let's go ahead and get started. The first question about fasting was, is it okay to get the COVID vaccine during the month of Ramadan? So the answer to that question is that yes, it is okay to get the vaccine during the month of Ramadan while you're fasting. So someone can receive a vaccination, they can get a shot while they are fasting. Why? Somebody might inquire. Well, because a sawm, sawm means to abstain. It is abstinence. It is to refrain. Refrain from what? Food and drink, okay? And also intercourse with one's spouse. But food and drink, to stay away from that, okay? Food and drink basically is not just something that nourishes the body overall or benefits the body, but it's something that specifically goes in the stomach, right? And so for that reason, that is what is prohibited. Something reaching the stomach, being put into the stomach, something being ingested, and it being a source of nourishment and strength, ghidha, for the person. Okay? In the case of receiving a shot or a vaccination, that is not going into the stomach. It is not that traditional form of nourishment. And so therefore, it will not break a person's fast. Okay? That's number one. And that is the opinion across the board. There's no difference of opinion on this issue. Everyone, all the scholars, are in agreement on this issue. Number two, someone's asking a question, do we treat a makeup fast as obligatory? Okay? Meaning in the sense of doing them on Friday, etc. So the answer to that question is that if somebody missed certain fasts during the month of Ramadan, they were sick, they were traveling, it was a sister on the days of her menstruation, and now that person has a number of days to make up of fasting after Ramadan is over. Those are obligatory on that person, but it's a little bit different. There's a difference between a fard mu'ayyan and a fard ghayr mu'ayyan, right? That there are some obligations that are fixed in terms of time, like fasting in Ramadan, okay? Like fasting today as the 16th of Ramadan. That is fixed, that is mandatory, okay? But once you have makeup fast to do, then they are not fixed to a particular time. They are not assigned to a particular time, but they are an obligation. However, you have the option of making them up whenever you can. Right? Obviously, you want to do them sooner rather than later, but you understand in the sense that you are not restricted to one specific day. So now the question is that should you treat them as more optional fast, where be a little bit more kind of you know, flexible or particular, like not keeping them on Friday, as the Prophet ﷺ told us, not to make the day of Friday a day of optional fasting. Or, you know, if you're optionally fasting and a guest comes over to your home, then, you know, there is the option of, you know, breaking that fast and, you know, according to some of the scholars, making it up another day because it's an optional fast, and hosting a guest is also a very important sunnah and practice of the Prophet ﷺ, then no, those are obligatory fasts. So you do want to be a little bit more particular about them. If the only day you can make them up is a Friday, do it. If a guest ends up coming over, prioritize your fast over hospitality, because even though it's not fixed to that day, it is an obligation. It is a duty and a responsibility to make up that fast. So you do want to be very serious and very vigilant and very diligent about it. Okay. The next question, and this is, you know, a tough question, meaning, you know, the sentiment behind it. Somebody sent in a question saying that they have a spouse that does not fast. A sister sent in the question saying, my husband does not fast. Do I need to pay kafara for him for all the years that he missed? And how much would that be? So first and foremost, obviously, that's a very difficult situation to find yourself in, where as a Muslim, and particularly one who is trying to practice their deen and religion, to be married to someone in a relationship with someone who does not fast. That's a really tough situation. You know, may Allah make it easy. Number two, do you need to pay a kafara for all the years that he has missed? No, you do not. Kafara is more for breaking the fast, not missing the fast. Breaking and violating the fast after having started it without a valid reason to do so, and then intentionally breaking it, as opposed to missing them. That's first of all, that's the first thing. Secondly, even if he had deliberately broken his fast, the kafara would be on him and not on you. The kafara would be on him and not on you. Wallahu ta'ala alam. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows best. And may Allah make it easy for this person, everyone who finds themselves in such a situation. Okay. The next question is a very interesting question, and it's a technical question. Okay, one that involves a difference of opinion. And so whenever we deal with difference of opinion, I always like to remind people that first and foremost, these differences of opinion are not just, you know, personal preferences. You know, difference of opinion is not just simply, you know, just people just having a different take on things. No. A difference of opinion in Islamic law, in fiqh, is the consequence and the result of the consideration of the evidences that are involved there. And then the analysis of those evidences. It is a scholarly endeavor. It is a scholarly exercise. And it is a very serious endeavor and exercise. It's not to be taken lightly. It's not frivolous, but it's a very serious thing. And when you have scholars having a difference of opinion, then it's very important to kind of, you know, if you're not of that caliber, where you have the ability to know all the evidences and understand the analytical tools used to evaluate those evidences, then it's good to kind of know your place and kind of sit that out, right? Do not feel the need to have commentary in regards to it. Like, oh, how that opinion doesn't make any sense, or how can they have that opinion? No. If you're not qualified to take part in that conversation, then it's best to just stay off the court, stay off the field, all right? And I don't mean to be disrespectful while saying that. I remind myself the same thing when I'm in a different arena, when I'm talking to doctors about medical issues, when I'm at the hospital talking to the doctors about my father's health. I'm not trying to express my own take and my own opinion. I'm listening, I'm asking questions, and I'm observing, and I'm taking the information. If I do want another opinion, or I do want some more insight, I go to somebody who I have a personal relationship, I have trust with, but who is qualified to have an opinion in that matter. Wallahu ta'ala alim bisawab, and Allah knows best, but I hope that everyone agrees, okay? So, now coming back to this, the question was, if a woman planned to do a khatam, a completion of the Quran in the month of Ramadan, can she recite from a phone during the menses, during the days of menstruation? So there are two issues here. Number one is making physical contact with the Mus'haf. Making physical contact with the Mus'haf. That is not permissible, according to everybody. There's no difference of opinion on that. That is very explicitly stated, and there's no difference of opinion on that. Okay? Of course, the physical contact could be made using some kind of gloves or some kind of instrument or tool, or somebody is turning the page with, you know, a pencil or something of that sort, that would be fine. Or utilizing a digital device, okay? So somebody utilizing a digital device would be, making physical contact with that would be permissible. The second issue is, can a woman recite the Quran while during the days of menstruation? So that is a difference of opinion. There's a difference of opinion there. Number one, the majority of the scholars, and in terms of the schools of fiqh, the Ahnaf, the Hanafi school, the Shafi'i school, and the Hanbali school, right, are all of the opinion that it is not allowed for a woman to be reciting Quran, making dua, saying supplications, things like that, that's different. But just like reciting a whole juz, right? Or reciting a page of the Quran, whatever your daily portion of recitation is. Okay, reciting is not to be done during the days of menstruation. That is time that should focus on dua and, you know, reflection and study and so on and so forth. Ustad Atifa Sharif, one of our instructors, Aqalam, has given a more detailed explanation talk on this, and you'll find it here on, you know, the Qalam Outlist, the Qalam channel. You can go to the Qalam YouTube channel and you'll find it there. Going back to the issue, there is a minority opinion. The Maliki school is of the opinion that it is allowed for a woman to read, to recite the Quran, like reading a whole juz, even during her days of menstruation. The Maliki school allows it. So therefore, it's a matter of difference of opinion. So it depends. My own, if I was to answer that question, the way that I answer that question, my analysis and my understanding of the issue leads me to take the Maliki position on this issue, that it is permissible. Wallahu ta'ala alam, and Allah knows best. Somebody asked a very good question. You know, we wanted to provide kind of a mix and a combination of different questions here during this session. So somebody asked a question, what would your advice be to pick up from a mid-Ramadan dip in productivity? What would your advice be to pick up from a mid-Ramadan dip in productivity? So I promise I'm not just making a shameless plug, but I'm saying this because I don't want the conversation here to get too long. I don't want to get too long-winded. I want to go through as many questions as I can, as quickly as I can. But tomorrow, we are having a special webinar discussing the Battle of Badr, because tomorrow is the 17th of Ramadan, which is the date that commemorates the Battle of Badr. The Battle of Badr happened in the second year of Hijrah in the life of the Prophet on the 17th day of Ramadan. So to commemorate that, inshallah, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. And so one of the answers to this, I will explain there. The reason why I don't get into it right now is because it'll get a bit long-winded and I don't want to do that here. However, that's one piece of advice that I'll mention, an inspiration from the Battle of Badr about how to pick yourself up from a mid-Ramadan kind of dip. Things that I would mention is that there are two types of, you know, things that we engage with from a spiritual point of view. The first one is more duty and responsibility. There is a task-oriented mentality and mindset where you are very task-oriented, right? I need to read one juz every day, or I need to listen to Quran for an hour every day. I need to read, you know, a page of translation every day. I need to, you know, listen, watch this video or that video every day. Very task-oriented kind of things. And those are good. Those are important. And then there are, you know, some things that we do that are more for encouragement and motivation. Encouragement and motivation. Inspiration, upliftment, right? Where you try to lift yourself up. You try to inspire yourself. You try to really gain some enthusiasm, right? And when you are experiencing that mid-Ramadan dip, it's very important to go and dial in to something that will kind of pick you up and will give you that boost of energy and enthusiasm that you are looking for and that maybe you feel like you're lacking, right? Very important to do that. And that can sometimes even be being in the company of some people, talking to a friend, having a conversation with someone. So try to switch things up, try to change things up. Try, if you haven't been going to the masjid, you've been praying at home, go to the masjid. If you've been going to the masjid, then maybe kind of take a break from the masjid and pray at home and really kind of dial in or go to a different place. Have a phone call with somebody, have a conversation with somebody, you know. But try to change up your routine. Break the monotony, and that will help you find the spirit and the enthusiasm that you're looking for that'll pick you up out of your mid-Ramadan slump. Inshallah, binillah. Okay, I wanted to tackle a couple of questions that we received here about zakat, because zakat is a very important issue, and that's something people try to address in the month of Ramadan. So if someone could not pay zakat al-fitr last year, but now has the means to pay, does he or she owe last year's zakat al-fitr as a debt? So if someone could not pay, that could mean two things. And I didn't get a chance to ask a follow-up because this was a question that somebody sent in. So I'll answer both versions, okay? Number one, is that if the person means to say somebody just did not have the money to pay zakat al-fitr, they couldn't afford to pay zakat al-fitr last year, then it wasn't due on you. Then you have nothing to pay this year. And if now you can afford to pay zakat al-fitr, you pay this year, you owe nothing from last year because you couldn't afford it. Okay, لا يكلف الله نفسا إلا وسعها. There are standards for qualifying to pay charity and the financial obligations that we have. There are standards for zakat. There are standards for zakat al-fitr, etc., etc. The udhiyah, the sacrifice. There are standards for these things. And if you couldn't even you couldn't afford to pay zakat al-fitr, you did not meet the minimal standard, the minimal threshold. Wallahu ta'ala alam, Allah knows best. Secondly, the second version of the answer is, if the questioner means that they did not pay, they could afford to pay, they were supposed to pay, but they just did not pay. They forgot about it, whatever the case is, negligence, they did not pay. Then do they owe it as a debt? Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Anytime you miss an obligation, you should make up that obligation. You should fulfill that obligation. You should recompense and compensate for that missed obligation. So yes, you should pay that and ask Allah for forgiveness. And be sure to pay on time this year. And as a side note, a lot of times people ask, you know, how much is zakat al-fitr? There's a whole range for it. It can be $10 is a good amount to estimate for zakat al-fitr on behalf of every one of your dependents, you yourself and your dependents. So like me and then my three children, people ask, well, what about my spouse? Technically, if your spouse is an independent person, an independent adult, so my wife will pay her own zakat al-fitr. I can pay it on her behalf, but technically speaking, that is her obligation. Okay, so that way I can estimate that I got to pay at least $40, maybe $50 in zakat al-fitr. And then where can you give it? Where do you give it? Well, you give it somewhere where it will go towards feeding the poor and the hungry, the masakin, the fuqara, the people who are in need of financial assistance for sustenance, all right? People that are like food insecure and hungry and homeless. That's the kind of folks that it needs to go to. Okay. And maybe there are local organizations where you can give that. But obviously, there's a lot of people watching and listening to this from a lot of different places. So if you are curious about a place, then, you know, there's many organizations, HHRD, Helping Hand for Relief and Development. They're very, you know, good friends and partners of ours. So there's many places that you can donate online as well. Okay. Somebody said that, how do I handle zakat if I live paycheck to paycheck with no savings? There's no zakat mandatory on you. If you basically are broke, right? You get $100, you spend $100. That's it. You have no savings. Then you have no zakat mandatory on you. Okay. The third question about zakat here was, is zakat applicable on total assets on the zakat anniversary date or assets saved over the last year? So technically speaking, it's mandatory on any assets that you've had for at least a year. But especially in this era of, you know, more, you know, monetary assets and currencies and, you know, things of that sort, that's where the scholars recommend that a very easy way to handle your zakat and to calculate your zakat is to actually fix an annual date, a annual zakat due date, okay? And on that day, whatever your assets are, zakatable assets, your savings are, your inventory for your business is, then you give 2.5% of that. So if you have a savings account, on that day, you have $10,000 in your savings account, then you should go ahead and give $250. Just go ahead and discharge that, donate $250 to a zakat eligible cause, and you're clear. So that's a way to do it. And that's just easy, and that's what's recommended, and it's practical. Okay, then a couple of miscellaneous questions, because again, I want to try to cover the full gambit and cover a variety of different issues. So the last couple of questions are a little bit more miscellaneous, if you will. Somebody asked, if you skipped over a verse in a surah accidentally while leading the prayer, is the salah invalid? The general answer is no. The general answer is no. So if you're reading Quran and you skip over a verse, then generally speaking, your prayer is still intact. It is still valid. It is still fine. Otherwise, a lot of hufaz all over the world would be in a lot of trouble. All right. I'm not, you know, trying to make fun of the hufaz, but, you know, not all hufaz, you know, as you say, not all hufaz were created equal, right? So not all hufaz are as strong in their memorization as everybody else. So, but nonetheless, you know, all jokes aside, if you are reciting and you skip over a verse, the general answer is that no, it does not affect the validity of your prayer. There are a very small handful of scenarios where you skip some wording or alter some wording or skip something where it can create a very, very problematic meaning, like theologically problematic. In those instances, the scholars do say that it's best to repeat that prayer. But those are very far and few in between. And somebody will point that out. Otherwise, generally speaking, you skipped over a verse. That's not a problem. Wallahu ta'ala alam, Allah knows best. And then, you know, since we did, one other question somebody sent in, and because I did address it earlier in the session, if there is a difference of opinion on an issue, which do we follow? That's a very good question, okay? So if there is a difference of opinion on an issue, which one should you follow? So the general answer is this. For if you are a person of knowledge, you are a student of knowledge, then you know you should follow based off of your knowledge and your understanding and what you study. That's where typically we talk about, you know, the madhahib and the schools of thought. However, if you are not like a formal student of knowledge, like a researcher in fiqh, okay, like an advanced student of Islamic jurisprudence, then, you know, you're everyday Muslim living your life and there's a difference of opinion on an issue, what should you follow? Every single Muslim should have someone or somewhere. And what I mean by somewhere is like an institution, okay? It can be your local mosque. It could be a place like Qalam, right? Or someone. You have an imam, you have a scholar, you have a sheikh, you have a Maulana Saab in your community, right? You have an ustada, you have a teacher, whatever the case is, okay? But everyone should try to have someone or somewhere where they feel a sense of connection, they have a level of trust, they understand from the surface that this person or this institution is qualified, like this institution has qualified people or this person is qualified, and then basically just take their recommendations. And if they do say, well, there's a difference of opinion on this issue, a very good follow-up question is, what do you recommend that I do in this situation? And that's why when I answered the question about the difference of opinion, I shared my point of view and my recommendation. Wallahu ta'ala alam bisawab. That's probably the best way to handle that and go about that. Every day, you know, just kind of depending on the time, I will see if there's any kind of questions in the comments and try to answer them, as briefly as I can, as quickly as I can. Which age as a teenager is one obligated to start fasting, male or female? The general answer is that once they attain puberty, once they attain adulthood, they reach puberty, then it's mandatory on them. So the first thing is the physical signs of puberty. Once a young girl, a young lady starts to menstruate, she has to start fasting. It's obligatory on her. Once a young man has facial hair or he experiences, you know, a nocturnal emission, like a wet dream, he requires a ghusl. So then at that point, he becomes obligated and mandated to start fasting. If none of those physical signs are manifest, then 15 is usually the age after which a person should just be treated as an adult Islamically, and they should be told that you have to pray and you have to fast. Okay. So someone's asking about Zakat al-Fitr. Do we have to pay only for food or can we donate in the masjid as well? Zakat al-Fitr, you can donate cash. You can give it at the masjid if your masjid is collecting Zakat al-Fitr separately to distribute to the poor and the needy. But you cannot give Zakat al-Fitr as a general donation for like the operating budget of a masjid or an institution or something. No. Zakat al-Fitr goes to feeding those who need that food. So someone's asking a question that if a child who isn't obligated to fast, they try to fast, they end up breaking their fast, is there any kind of penalty on them? No, that's a child. They have nothing to make up for. They have no penalty, no nothing like that. There were a couple of other questions here. I'll try to see if I can find them and locate them. If you have a wet dream while fasting, does that break your fast? No, it does not. Just take a ghusl so that you can pray, but it does not nullify your fast. Is it haram to listen to music while fasting? So that involves a whole nother question of, you know, what is the ruling and the permissibility of music? That's a whole nother discussion for another day. I'd rather not go into that right now. What I will say is that if somebody holds the opinion that listening to music is not permissible, then it won't be permissible while fasting. If somebody holds the opinion that listening to music in and of itself is not impermissible, it's not haram, we can still say that it's not a good activity while fasting. And it's probably not the best use of your time while fasting. Someone's asking that in order for your Taraweeh to be valid, your Isha has to be valid. Generally, the idea is yes, Taraweeh is performed after Salat al-Isha. So you want to pray Salat al-Isha first, and then you pray Salat al-Taraweeh. Wallahu ta'ala a'lam bisawab, and Allah knows best. And somebody asked once again, what is the percentage that zakat is supposed to be? It is 2.5% of your annual savings. Wallahu ta'ala alam. Someone's asking a question. Let me see if it's possible to answer here. Let's see. Someone's asking a question, if somebody owes money or has a loan, but it's not being demanded immediately, what's better, to just pay it off, try and pay it off as soon as possible, or slowly pay it back, resulting in qualifying for zakat, meeting the nisab? So it depends. And, you know, if you owe money that is on a scheduled, it's on a schedule for being paid back, then at that time, stay on the schedule and pay your zakat. That's probably the better decision. But if it's just an ASAP kind of thing, the person's not pressuring you, but you know, the idea is to pay it back as soon as possible, then I would probably say paying it back is a better thing to do. Someone's asking a question about making, you know, dua for your non-Muslim, you know, any non-Muslims in your life. Generally speaking, the dua that we should make is, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala guide them and may Allah provide them with iman. Wallahu ta'ala alam bisawab. So with that, inshallah, we're going to wrap up today's session. We'll be having these every day. I'll try to keep these a little bit shorter than I did today. Today was the first one, and I just kind of was you know, just answering the questions and got kind of caught up. But we'll try to keep these a little bit more brief and short. And, you know, occasionally we will have some visitors and things like that dropping in. Sheikh Noman, Qari Noman, is saying he has a question, but then he doesn't ask his question. So things like that will happen. But I just want you to know that, inshallah, not be bothered by that. Because somebody then asked him, then brother, why don't you just post your question? Why don't you ask your question? So, but inshallah, if somebody's looking on how to answer questions, how to ask questions so that they can be answered in this session, then you can, we'll be posting on the Qalam Facebook page, my Facebook page, and on Twitter, on Instagram, etc., that if you do have any questions, you'll be able to post those questions there. Wallahu ta'ala alam bisawab. Jazakumullahu khairan. Barakallahu feekum. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.